Iranian and Russian presidents hold talks in Moscow, vowed to enhance bilateral relations in various fields. Russia says Western weapons sales to Ukraine is raising tensions, as Washington approves additional security aid to Kiev. And political pressure is mounting on British Prime Minister Boris Johnson to resign over the so-called Partygate scandals.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mews. Thanks for joining us.
The Iranian and Russian presidents have agreed to work to further enhance bilateral relations in various fields in a face-to-face meeting in Moscow. Iran's Ebrahim Raisi said that there is no obstacle for the two countries to boost economic, political, and military ties. He said that Tehran also wants to establish strategic relations with Moscow. Raisi also thanked Russia for supporting Iran's membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Vladimir Putin, for his part, said the Tehran-Moscow relations have been constantly improving. He noted that the trade between the two had a positive trend last year, despite difficulties caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Putin said that there is a wide range of issues to be discussed during Raisi's two-day trip. This is Raisi's third foreign trip since taking office in July of last year. Iran's oil, foreign, and economy ministers are part of his entourage. Earlier, we were joined by our Moscow correspondent, Marina Kortanova, who gave us more on the visiting Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi's meeting with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin.
So Russian president also proposed to discuss the situation in Afghanistan and also said he would like to hear Ebrahim Raisi's position on the situation around the Iranian nuclear deal, as I mentioned. Also, Russian president mentioned that the Syrian authorities were able to overcome terrorist threats in the country, largely thanks to the help of the Russian Federation and Iran. And on the whole, according to Vladimir Putin, Russia and Iran are cooperating very closely in the international agenda. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, in talks with Russian leader, thanked his counterpart for facilitating Tehran's entry into the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, and the president of Iran called relations with Russia strategic and long-term. The Iranian side handed over to Russia a draft agreement on the strategic cooperation for a period of 20 years. Russian President Vladimir Putin noted the development of trade between the two countries, even in a pandemic hard situation. He recalled that Russia and Iran are implementing major projects, that the work is going on in many directions. Also, Vladimir Putin thanked Ebrahim Raisi for taking the time to come to Moscow, even though the pandemic is still ongoing.
A meaningful leap forward. That's how the Iranian foreign minister termed the expansion of interactions between Tehran and Moscow ahead of Iran's president visit. In an article written for the Sputnik news agency, Hossein Amir Abdollahian talks about Tehran's new roadmap based on which cooperation with all neighbors, especially those in the Russian Federation, is a priority. Describing Russia as a powerful neighbor and friend, with ties based on respect and mutual interests, the top diplomat says Tehran is setting the stage for expanded cooperation in a wide range of fields. From economy, culture and science to technology, defense and security, the opportunities for partnership are immense. Parliamentary and media projects also provide good grounds for cooperation. The two sides also have a lot to discuss when it comes to regional developments, including the West Asia region, South Caucasus and Central Asia, and international matters such as Vienna negotiations aimed at reviving the 2015 Iran deal. But how can these matters be addressed given the West's anti-Iran and anti-Russia approach? Tehran and Moscow share common views on geopolitical issues in West Asia, which is already facing numerous challenges, from war and foreign military interventions to economic instability. The situation in Afghanistan, Syria, and Yemen are some instances where the two sides share similar perspectives. Amir Abdollahian argues that by holding bilateral consultations and preventing third parties from playing a role in the region, the two states can settle regional issues, especially at a time when unilateralism has proven to be a failed strategy. On security, Moscow has provided Tehran with military equipment such as the S-300 missiles, which along with Iran's domestic advancements can help boost the nation's defense capabilities in the face of foreign threats and promote regional defense and security capabilities. This will also help the two countries expand their fight against terrorism. In the field of economy, the two countries have huge unexploited potential. The trade volume currently ranges between $2 and $3 billion a year, which is way below expectations. The 20-year cooperation agreement the two sides signed in 2001 expired last year. An extension of that agreement, probably to be brought up in the ongoing talks, will make it possible for both sides to boost trade, which experts believe can be upgraded to the level of $20 billion a year. The relationship takes on added significance, especially at a time when both countries are hit by U.S. sanctions that can unite the two states by joint motivation to try and circumvent those sanctions by taking steps such as the exclusion of the dollar from their mutual transactions. As it seems, Tehran and Moscow are on the path to capitalizing on their political solidarity and expanding their relations, as well as consolidating their ties with other countries in the East to build a united front in the face of the West's hostile agenda.
Iran and the three European signatories to the 2015 deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, have held talks today in the Austrian capital. Our Vienna correspondent Homa Leski joined us earlier with an update. She said that Iran has expressed its readiness to comply with the JCPOA commitments once the country is assured the sanctions will be removed in a verifiable manner.
But what we know from sources close to the talks is that at the moment there are still some sticking points, both when it comes to the issue of the list of sanctions that need to be removed by the Americans and also on the issues of verification and guarantees, how the sanctions removal can be effectively verified for Iran and how the U.S. can give guarantees to Iran that it will not withdraw from the deal again or reimpose sanctions once it is back in the JCPOA. And also there are still sticking points when it comes to the issue of implementation or sequencing. That would mean what actions, practical steps need to be taken by both Iran and the Americans to have the JCPOA restored. On the issue of sequencing, Iran has said time and again before, you might know, that it will only go back to its nuclear commitments after the effective removal of sanctions, after it has verified the removal of sanctions that need to be removed and are in violation of the JCPOA. We'll have to see if that can actually be achieved, but Iran has said that this is what it wants. What sources are saying is that at this stage, despite the fact that there are sticking points, besides it is possible for them to overcome these differences. They're saying that these are not insurmountable issues. They can be overcome. And if there is the political will to do so, an agreement could be possible, as Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said, at a good pace.
The U.S. Secretary of State says Washington will continue relentless diplomatic efforts to prevent what he calls the Russian aggression against Ukraine. Antony Blinken was speaking during a joint press conference with his Ukrainian counterpart, Dmytro Kuleba, in Kiev. Earlier, the top American diplomat met with the President, Volodymyr Zelensky, and once again claimed that Russia intends to attack Ukraine. Russia has vehemently denied the allegation and blames escalating tensions on Western weapons sales to Ukraine. For his part, Zelensky thanked the United States for increasing its military aid to his country.
I would like to thank you personally, President Biden and the U.S. administration, for the support, for the military assistance to Ukraine, for increasing this assistance, for the assistance which we are already receiving, and for the support which I'm sure will continue in the future. This assistance not only demonstrates the support to our strategic plans as for Ukraine joining the NATO alliance, but what is the most important, it increases the level of our army and resource capability of our army.
Earlier in the day, a senior U.S. official confirmed that Washington has authorized an additional $200 million in security aid to Ukraine. Late last year, the White House delivered $450 million in military assistance to Ukraine. The French president once again calls for a new European security framework and more strategic independence within the 27-nation bloc. Emmanuel Macron says Europeans need to defend their own security standards and that they should not be subject to the choice of others. Addressing the EU Parliament, Macron said the bloc needs to anticipate international crises instead of merely responding to them. He added that EU members must be able to collectively make their demands and enforce them, including with regard to Russia. The remarks come 1 week after the European Union was excluded from U.S.-Russia talks in Ukraine. The bloc was also sidelined in the hasty withdrawal of U.S.-led NATO troops from Afghanistan. Controversy over the so-called Partygate scandal in the U.K. is far from over. The British Prime Minister once again faces calls for resignation amid a revolt within his own party over new revelations about the 2020 Downing Street party.
Mr. Speaker, like so many people up and down the country, he has concluded that the Prime Minister and the Conservative Party have shown themselves incapable of offering the leadership and government this country deserves.
No matter the excuse, there is no excuse for taking the British people for fools. Will the Prime Minister agree it is now time for him to resign?
Boris Johnson is facing yet another grilling from the opposition in Parliament. He not only deflected again the resignations call, but said that he is intensely proud of what his government has done. The latest round of pressure over Johnson's breach of COVID rules comes amid reports that lawmakers from his own party are turning their backs on him. The Daily Telegraph says so far, 12 Tories have submitted letters of no confidence in him, and so far, several leaked videos and emails have revealed about the parties held at Downing Street Garden and other government departments. But Johnson says nothing can be confirmed until a senior government official concludes an internal investigation. The leadership challenge is not the only problem for British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's government. His latest predicament is a record inflation level. Annual consumer price inflation is running at 5.4%. That's the highest in three decades. Prices for food, hospitality, and household goods were the main factors pushing up inflation in December. The rise is putting pressure on British households, climbing their living standards. It's also forcing the central bank to raise interest rates next month. British inflation is widely expected to peak in April when household energy bills are regulated to increase by around 50%. The opposition is using this trend to further tighten the grip on Johnson. They're calling on the Prime Minister to offset the rise in energy bills. And yet another act of atrocities against Palestinians is Israeli regime forces demolish a home in the occupied Al-Quds. They also arrest 18 people claiming that they were violating a court ruling and disturbing public order.
These people were illegally arrested and the house was demolished as well. They did not have a demolition order. This is an illegal arrest. It's an arrest out of revenge. They want to liquidate the Palestinian population, and Palestinians are subconsciously ready to die not to be evicted.
In the early hours of Wednesday, Israeli bulldozers backed by troops flattened the home of the Salhia family. The house was threatened with eviction since the year 2017. The lawyer for the family says the occupants had agreed to evict, but Israeli forces still arrested everyone before destroying the house. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the move is in line with the continuing brutal war on the occupied Al-Quds and its residents. The fate of hundreds of Palestinians living in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood has been hanging in the balance for years. The regime has been seeking to drive out dozens of families for their ancestral homes. We spoke with our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, a short time ago. She says that Palestinians are hoping that the international community would intervene to stop Israel's demolitions and land grab in the occupied territories.
Palestinians have been demanding the international community that at the time the Israeli authorities are forcing people out of their homes in the lands that are occupied in 1967, then the appropriate solution would be to return them back to their lands and to their homes that were occupied by the Israelis in 1948. This is would be the first solution. However, the Israelis are refusing to give back Palestinians their rights, and at the same time they are trying to let more Palestinians live new Nakba at the time they give the Israeli settlers lands and homes and make their life easy in Al-Quds and other areas. The international community has been calling on the Israeli regime to stop the illegal demolition of the Palestinian homes and properties, especially that many properties had been funded by the European Union itself. But as usual, Israel acts as a state above the law. It ignores these calls, so Palestinians are still hoping from the international community and the EU to act, to translate their statements into actions on ground and not to only issue condemnations.
Today marks Gaza Day, a day in commemoration of the resistance of the people of the Gaza Strip against Israeli hostilities. This day was designated after a major Israeli military campaign against Gaza in 2008. During the 22 days of that war, thousands of Palestinians were killed and many others were injured. However, the regime failed to achieve any of its goals and was pushed back due to the resistance of the Palestinian people. Iranians also marked this day to voice their support for the steadfastness of the Palestinians. For more than a decade, the Gaza Strip has been under constant Israeli blockade. This, in addition to the regime's other offensive operations, including the bombardment of civilian infrastructure, has affected the lives of more than 2 million Palestinians living in Gaza. Several months since the Taliban seized power in Afghanistan, and still no official recognition from world countries. Now the group is making another call to address the issue. The Taliban's acting prime minister has especially urged Islamic countries to start the recognition and to take lead in the process. Mohammad Hassan Ahoun says if that happens, the Taliban would then be able to develop quickly. The Taliban formed a government after taking control over Afghanistan back in August. Since then, however, no country has recognized their administration. Even Afghanistan's neighboring countries have been reluctant, calling for an inclusive government to be formed there. Meanwhile, the U.S. and other Western states have frozen billions of dollars of Afghan banking assets, and its development funding has been cut off following the Taliban takeover. This has worsened the humanitarian situation in a country already ravaged by two decades of war. Investigation into what caused last year's attack on the U.S. Capitol is entering a new stage. For the first time, a House of Representatives committee that is probing the matter subpoenas a family member of former President Donald Trump. The select committee has obtained communication records of the former president's son, Eric Trump, and his fiancée. The committee is also demanding documents and testimony from four of Trump's legal team, including his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani's lawyer says the subpoena is nothing but a political theater. The four individuals had backed Trump's voter fraud claims and vowed to overturn the election results. In January of last year, thousands of Trump supporters swarmed the Capitol to disrupt a joint session of Congress that was to certify Joe Biden's electoral win. The House committee is aiming to release its interim report on the attack in the summer and a final report in the fall. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, childbearing. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of childbearing in the Islamic lifestyle. Well, it is something which is apparent, that in the whole world we can see there is a problem of childbearing in many nations or in many countries. There are many countries whose native people are less than those who are migrated. And on top of that, obviously, we can see that the ratio of the male and female, or the older generation with the youngest generation, is equal. And this is something which is alarming in today's world. Therefore, Islam has said and emphasized on having more children. Why? Because the cause of the generations being generated, or this human life, it goes on with the generations. If we do not have generations, the passage of time or the transformation of this generation to next generation will become harder. With the pandemic that we can see in today's world, the amount of people who are dying, these all things shows us that childbearing is one of the important topics.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A2Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of childbearing in Islamic lifestyle, and we said that this is a major problem in the whole world, and especially with this pandemic that we have, obviously, the people are dying more, and then we are having less children being born, and this is a major problem. When we look at the Islamic texts, we look that the Prophet has emphasized a lot on childbearing in order to have the next generations or have more children. And therefore, we have this in which he said, like, تَنَاكَهُ وَتَكْثُرُ, marry and have more children. فَإِنِّي أُبَاهِ بِكُمُ الْأُمَمَ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ وَلَوْ بِالسِّقْتِ. And he said, even if there is a miscarriage, do not worry about miscarrying, but have more children, because this will guarantee the human life in the future, because the human life needs to carry on throughout the history and transform and transfer its experiences from this generation to the next generation. And if we are not having more children, this means that we are not transferring what we need to transfer. Obviously, we are transferring the sciences, the education, the perfection to the next generation, and this is the right of our children to be born, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A2Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
See you too. Tumah. Yani?
They're just two.
Bazaar. Iranian leather production dates back thousands of years. In fact, Iran is one of the oldest leather producers in the world. Ancient artifacts show Iranians were using leather to make shoes, clothes, and weapons at the height of the Bronze Age in the 15th century BC. Historically, Iranian leather was always a welcomed import because of its high quality and the country's strategic location along the Silk Road. The leather production legacy continues to this day, but it looks a lot different with the evolution of technology and industry. Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Adema. This week, we'll take a close look at the leather industry while shining the spotlight on shoe productions. We wanted to see how much leather is produced in Iran and what some of its major uses are. We will also check out some of the contributions of this industry to Iran's national economy. So let's get started. To become more familiar with the leather industry, we visited Adura, which is a company that specializes in making leather footwear for women. This company has been around for two decades. Its production hall is enormous, and it all starts with the raw material. First, leather material is sorted based on quality grades. Then, patterns are cut. The pieces are then sent to a section devoted to making the shoe uppers. The preparation room is where the pieces are stamped with markers and eyelets are punched. From here, leather parts are taken to a completely mechanized montage division. After the upper part of the shoe is stitched, the insoles are assembled onto the shoe and sent to the finishing room. At this stage, shoes are polished, decorated, and as the name implies, the finishing touches are added, preparing them for packaging and distribution. This company carries out quality control checks on all stages of production. They use highest-grade leather produced in the country and chose material that follows international grading processes. Following international guidelines also helps them on the path of exports. Some time ago, it overhauled its production unit and mechanized many processes to maintain consistent high quality. And one way to do this is by automating repetitive processes. Now, not every shoe manufacturer is the same. Some shoes can be created in hundreds of steps, but don't worry, we won't take you through all of them. On another note, it's important for manufacturers to produce products along international standards. This, in the long run, helps producers stay up to date with regulations, allowing them to export their items easily when they are able to. Maintaining quality is key in staying relevant in any market for the shoe industry, and it is no different. Shoe production has its own specific standards. And most of the quality comes from the material used and the way shoes are crafted with attention to flawlessly executing details. This company adheres to strict standards set by Iran's Bureau of Standards as well as international criteria for productions. Plus, it has received its operation licenses from the Ministry of Industry and other affiliated organizations. It might be interesting to know that this company has previously indirectly exported its products, meaning clothing and apparel companies would purchase from this brand and sell these items along with their own products to customers abroad. This manufacturer has an eye on the future and is already expanding its production facilities. They hope to launch a second production unit in the near future, which will incorporate men's footwear as well. But that's not all. They also have plans to further develop and expand the industry as a whole. Its unique philosophy regarding the U.S.-imposed sanctions has been a driving force behind its massive productions. They viewed sanctions as a blessing in disguise that helps strengthen production in this field. In general, Iwan's leather is a high potential market because of its soaring added value profits. For example, the export of one leather jacket is 5 times more profitable than a single barrel of oil. Iwan is among the top 3 leather producers and exporters of semi-finished products. Plus, the country is globally ranked 3rd in terms of quantity and quality of leather produced. Global leather experts consider Iranian sheepskin as the best leather in the world. They say this leather is easier to process and has less odor. Some of the finest sheep leather comes from the Mogan Plain and its surrounding regions. Additionally, the best cow and goat leather belongs to areas in Iran with dry climates. This is because there are fewer diseases and animals suffering fewer environmental scratches. Those who have the potential for animal husbandry have also turned their gaze towards leather production. This is true for the nomadic communities in the country as well. Skins and hides from livestock used for food production are used in the leather industry too. There are some 230 active leather producing units that employ well over 3,800 people. That's according to the Leather Industries Association in Iran. Some of the most famous provinces for leather production include East Azerbaijan, Tehran, Khorasan, and Hamadan, among others. Most of the leather companies belong to the private sector. Many of these factories are working at only 40% of their total production capacities despite high levels of investment in the domestic industry. This is partly because of the limitations in infrastructure, technical facilities, and modern technology. Domestic leather production has come a long way from traditional production methods. Right now, most of Iran's leather exports are in the form of raw materials. But exports of other leather products, such as shoes and clothing, are also on the rise. Nevertheless, industry participants are grappling with some major obstacle which has drawn the attention of the government. Surprisingly, 80% of Iran's sheepskin and 20% of goatskin are exported to Italy, Turkey, and Russia, just to name a few. Iran is well known in the international raw material market. But because of its shy presence of finished products, exported materials often return to Iran at exorbitant prices. The problem is that the production chain is not complete. Part of the chain, including shoe soles and other accessories, is not produced domestically on a large scale. This has led to costly imports of items that can be potentially manufactured locally. In recent years, the government has taken steps towards supporting domestic manufacturers. One such program is to offer financial assistance to companies in need of capital. Also, a few years back, manufacturers were competing with smuggled goods. In order to increase market regulation and stabilize conditions for healthy competition, the government implemented a campaign against illicit imports and contraband. All things considered, some 120 million cubic meters of light leather and over 230 million cubic meters of heavy leather were produced in the country last year. That's according to Iran's Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. The majority of leather used in the industry is supplied domestically, which is complemented by a small amount of imports. The leather industry has so much untapped potential and promises a bright future. There are numerous opportunities for investment in this field, particularly in technology and production machinery, as well as packaging, distribution, and branding.
The medical device industry is the second most profitable global commercial enterprise,
This is followed by oil, gas, and petrochemical sectors. Iran's healthcare system is far more modern than many might expect. From family planning to organ transplants and cosmetic surgery, the medical sector is progressive and advanced. Considered a high-tech industry, the medical device field is heavily regulated, with large investments going towards R&D activities. A lot happens behind the scenes before medicine and medical treatments reach a patient. This time, we will venture through Iran's medical device industry while giving center stage to advanced laboratory technology. We'll take a look at some of the major players in this field, plus check out why this technology is important to the health sector. Moreover, we will uncover the contributions of this industry to the national economy. Our journey took us to a knowledge-based company that specializes in producing high-tech medical lab equipment and instruments. Noyan Negin Parsian was first established in 2006 with the goal of improving the quality of medical diagnosis and scientific advancement in labs. The ultimate objective is to improve the health of the patients.
I remember back then, since the 2007, it was around 14 years ago, the technology was not so fast in this area. So we have to seek for opportunities in order to work with the good brands. And from that time, our aim was to introduce the technologies that works in regarding of better diagnosis and also service better for the human beings. And from the very beginning, it was our aim in order to work in this field, and also it was the target to reach there.
This knowledge-based company began its activities in the field of research. Then it moved on to manufacturing and importing medical lab tech.
By working with very good brands, we were managed to introduce high-quality products, especially in the field of in vitro diagnostic devices and also reagents. And we introduced many big brands into this, system. And at that time, I remember there was very few suppliers in this case. But since the technology went through, and also the new platforms have been introduced to the society, the quality of the services also increased, and we were managed to adapt ourselves with the life, and also with the performances of the devices that were offering to the human services.
Among its products, one can name controllers or diagnostic kits for infectious diseases and cancer. Plus, they make lab consumable products such as thinners and substrate liminal, which is a type of chemical that reacts to light as a byproduct. In short, this company has strived to automate manual systems in medical labs. Previously, most processes in labs were carried out by hand. This is both costly and time-consuming, with low output. Having numerous people working on one lab project also increases the margin of error, which is potentially detrimental to the final diagnosis of a patient.
Back then, I remember there was very, very few automatic systems. Everything was done by manual systems. I mean, when you go to the laboratory, you would find out that everything is done totally by manual systems. There has been some employees over there which were working just like shift by shift and process by process until a test has been done. And it was a very, very costly and also at the same time time-taking, and also with a very, very low output. The results were not that accurate.
Importing medical products can rack up a mighty bill for labs. Importing processes and clearances can sometimes take months before critical products reach consumers. It's noteworthy that imports cost billions in capital flight. And more often than not, patients are the ones paying the high prices of these imports. With this in mind, many domestic manufacturers have stepped in to fill the market void and reduce dependency on imports. One of the main goals of this company is to indigenize local knowledge and technology by strengthening research and development. It has received its permits from the National Medical Device Directorate and the Ministry of Health and Medical Education.
So, finally speaking, I remember it was the year 2012 or 2013 that we found out some potential suppliers and started drawing out the requirements of what is the requirements of the market, what the customer is looking for, what they want from us, and how we can match their requirements with the potential suppliers, and how we can build this line in order to move this technology and transfer this technology back to Iran. It took a long time because we have got around, if I say correctly, two or three failures until we found out how we can reach to this technology in order to present it to the society of the laboratory and also diagnostic systems in Iran.
Among its competitive advantages, one can name the low cost of production relative to foreign brands. Additionally, it has access to advanced scientific knowledge and research that already exists within the country. Dependability and accuracy are key components that increase the quality of its products. And manufacturing them with precision and consistent quality is no easy task.
Well, the first thing talks in Nuyan is the quality. We never sacrifice the quality in comparison with anything else. Despite on pricing, performances, after sales, the quality talks first. Because we're dealing with something which in its platform and its results, the quality is the first thing that talks. If you go to a laboratory and you don't have quality, you have nothing. In other words, in laboratory, the performances and quality and the pricing are the things that go step by step. It means that you first need to have a quality, and then you need to have a performance, and later on you need to have a price. So
this knowledge-based company collaborates with academic institutions and research firms. Plus, it makes its products along the axis of exports, meaning all productions follow stringent national and international standards.
From 2015, everything was totally clear from us. The path was very clear, and we found out that it's a very great opportunity in order to present the system. And officially, by the year 2017, we started launching a very, very fast, reliable platform that was working based on the chemiluminescence, and that platform was totally automatic. I mean, the majority of the process that you could see in the laboratories that has been done by manual back then in 2007, in 2015 was totally automatic. Everything, I mean, from the random access processes, by the assay menus, by the processing the human bloods and also serums, until getting the results and the other things. And it was very, very attractive for me because it was the first time that an Iranian company could manage to present this platform in a very, very reliable way. And it was, unlike the others, it was not, affected by the sanctions that we had.
This company stands on the cusp of exporting its products and has already begun sending samples to European markets. It is also open to cross-border collaborations, particularly with neighboring regions, as most of these nations share many of the same values and domestic demands.
From the very beginning, Nuyan has the eye of the exporting of the products. And I can say for sure, in comparison with the other international brands, we have got the advantages of the pricing. And if we keep the quality stable, definitely we would be the winner of the game. Definitely the safest way is not going far away. But we are a little bit aggressive in this case, and we started working with some countries in the Europe. We just sent samples over there in order to be performed, in order to be checked, and we also were participating in medical trade shows in order to show that we are also having the capabilities of doing the production, and we are a brand made in Iran, but we are also proud of being in Iran. We do not want to change something, we do not want to be faked. And we want to say that despite having a lot of troubles of sanctions, we are here, we are still alive, and we want to keep going forward.
At the height of the U.S.-imposed sanctions, Nuyan was taking big strides in advancing biotechnology products and other knowledge transfers. This company believes that with diligence and ingenuity, it can create exceptional opportunities despite challenges posed by the sanctions.
I do remember when the first sanctions happened, it was just like a shock to the society because everyone was locked. What to do, how to deal with these things, how to transfer the money, and so on. But we learned. We learned how to make the processes much more clear, how to find the balance between the supply and production, how to make the quality stable. I can say for sure, nobody can say the society is not affected by the sanctions. But the point is that we learned and we become strong. There's a saying that whatever doesn't kill you makes you strong. And it definitely makes the Iranian society strong, because now, in comparison with, I can say 13 years ago, there are at least 100 times manufacturers in this field, and they're trying to upgrade their quality. I do believe it's a beneficial advantage for the Iranian society. Otherwise, if you see that we are going back to the history on 2007, more than 95% of the consumption in the whole area of the laboratory has been imported from the outside, while now I can say at least 60%, at least 60% has been manufactured, I'd say, locally. And in comparison with the manufacturers that are located outside, our quality talks.
When the coronavirus broke out, domestic knowledge-based companies led the battle by expanding their production lines. All medicine used to treat COVID-19 have been manufactured domestically so far. This goes to show how the industry is on top of scientific developments. There are roughly 500 medical equipment manufacturers active in the country that produce tens of thousands of products. Here's more on the market.
Iran has a robust industry for producing medical devices. The private sector has invested millions towards manufacturing in this field. The bulk of machine parts, including software, can be developed and engineered by domestic firms. It might be interesting to know the domestic medical device market has grown by 9% since last year. This is why the global average growth was about 6%. That's based on the Office of Medical Equipment at the Ministry of Health. Back in 2018, the National Medical Device Directorate estimated Iran's market in this field was worth nearly $3 billion. The exact figure for this year has not been updated, but it's likely to be much higher. According to the directorate, currently 105 Iranian types of medical equipment and products are exported to 55 countries worldwide, in which your diagnostic kits are at the top of the list with around 30% of the export market. Roughly 500,000 types of medical devices and equipment are made across the globe. Iran is able to domestically manufacture 56% of those available in the world. Important items such as vital sign monitors, operating room monitors, and incubators are among medical devices being exported to Asia-Pacific right now.
Medical devices are not the only products keeping the healthcare industry afloat. Pharmaceutical productions also greatly contribute to this sector. And the pharmaceutical industry is pulsing with new medicines each year. Some 3,000 medicines in thousands of variations are currently produced in Iran. There are some 120 pharmaceutical companies nationwide and around 70 units that specialize in producing raw material needed in this sector.
According to officials, pharmaceutical imports have dramatically dropped by 90% over the years. Domestically produced medicine has helped save the country billions. Iran reduced its currency flight from over $4 billion in 2017 to nearly half that number in 2020. That's Poyng Gaf of statistics from the Food and Drug Administration. Figures from the National Pharmaceutical Syndicate show Iran's domestic pharma market was worth $4.5 billion in 2021. 97% of the pharmaceuticals currently consumed in the country are also domestically produced, making the country nearly self-sufficient in this area.
All right, everyone, it's time for me to step aside for several minutes as my good friend and colleague is about to take you on another educational adventure. Let's go check it out.
Entertainment and recreation are as old as the human history and have changed according to the technological advances of the day. However, the emergence of digital games have come at the cost of detaching us from our real-time interaction with our fellow humankind and led to a sedentary lifestyle. That's where companies like Karoshan step in to bridge that gap by designing and building motor skills equipment for amusement parks. The fledgling company has brought together top specialized experts in the field of children from around the country to design amusement parks that cover all age groups, with a focus on children between the ages of 4 and 12. The equipment made by Carl Roshan are produced based on the ergonomic and intellectual needs of each age group, both boosting their physical activity and enhancing their mental skills. The entertainment industry is constantly growing, and the Iranian brand says it needs to keep abreast of the latest trends. To this end, it has under its belt a dedicated R&D team that scouts for any new advancement in the field. There's a famous Iranian saying that goes, "A healthy mind is a result of a healthy body." And Carl Roshan is trying to materialize the exact same thing. The Iranian brand says at a time when technology is pervading every aspect of our lives, promoting entertainments that enhance our physical activity will build a healthier generation.
We are getting close to the end of our program, but before we go, let's check out some interesting news and trends in this industry and its related trades. If you like trade shows and exhibits, this bit of news is just for you. The capital city of Tehran will be holding a leather exhibition in January dedicated to accessories, shoes, clothing, furniture, and so much more. Nearly 150 companies will be participating in the three-day event. Businesses will be able to showcase their latest products and capabilities in the exhibition. The main purpose is for producers and other industry participants to expand their networks and find new markets. Also, the exhibit is a platform for knowledge transfer as businesses present their latest technical and industrial achievements in this field. Plus, such events offer opportunities for foreign investment, entrepreneurship, and sustainable employment. In Iran, much of the domestically produced leather is used to make shoes, and the industry is booming with massive productions. Presently, Iran can produce around 450 million pairs of shoes annually. That's according to the Iranian Association of Shoe Manufacturers. The sector is now setting a goal to increase yearly productions to 1 billion pairs of shoes in the next few years. The association estimates this would rake in around $6 billion in export revenues. Tehran plans to increase its shoe exports to neighboring regions as well as landlocked Central Asian countries. Market analysts attribute the growth in the domestic shoe industry to ban on shoe imports, which was implemented in 2018. They also argue that the fluctuation in the dollar exchange rate prompted more Iranians to turn to reasonably affordable, domestically produced shoes. And with that, we wrap up our program for today. Thanks for tuning in, stay safe, and I will see you next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.